calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is bitten the dust. And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Matt Smith. In the sixth episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith, I will ask Matt his thoughts on the home victory for Fulham against Blackburn. This show will be looking at Fulham from a coaching perspective, so I'm really curious to hear what Matt has to share today. Before we get started, I want to welcome back my friend to the sixth edition of this show. Matt, welcome back to the Coaching Corner.
Thanks, Russ, and really excited. You know, took the week off after the international break, and so really excited to dive back into it. And I think we've got plenty to talk about, especially from a coaching perspective, with this game and it being the quintessential match of two halves.
Absolutely. Listen, I cannot wait to pick your brain on this game. And let's just start here again. We are looking back at the Blackburn victory for Fulham 2-1. Just share with me an overall view of what you watched on Sunday morning.
Well, I'll start and end with this. It's 3 points. And this is a coach will always say it's a results-driven business, and we got the result. Whether we deserved it or not, that's a different question. But the result is the result, and we'll take it any way we can get it. Like I said, it's a match of two halves. I thought we came out and played pretty well in the first half, and really troubled them with our pace up front, especially with Moussa Dembélé, and really kind of. Had the most of the play. Blackburn had some dangerous chances as well, but I thought we had a lot of it, and we were able to capitalize on two pretty good goals. Maybe even could have had a third, but then in the second half, just seemed to kind of go back into our old ways of really dropping off and letting the team play and letting them get back, letting them work their way back into the game. And it's a dangerous thing. Being up 2-0 at halftime is a dangerous thing. And because you're sitting there thinking, we can do this and everything's good and you're all relaxed. And the other team's thinking, hey, we're right in this. So, it's a dangerous thing. But, at the end of the day, thank God there's no goal line technology in the championship. We'll take the 3 points and move on.
Listen, I will take the 3 points, but yes, I will second. Thankfully, there is no goal line technology in the championship, because that definitely would have been reversed. And, let's take the 3 points and let's move on from there. But let's now really get into breaking down this match. But again, as we have done on all these episodes, we start with the players. And I really want to start here. I'm glad that we're starting here, because I think this player for me was the man of the match. So I'm curious your thoughts. Break down the player of goalkeeper Andy Larnigan, Matt.
He was fantastic. Absolutely, I think, no doubt, man of the match. I think you could probably say he won us the match, because he kept us in it with a couple of great saves in both halves. Really held things down back there, and I think that he's our number one now. I think even when Betts comes back, I don't think after a performance like that, and how he's been, pretty good all year, but especially after a performance like that, I'm not sure you can take him out. I'm not sure you can really justify that, even when Betts gets back. But I know that's a ways away, so hopefully he'll be able to get into kind of a comfort zone and be able to keep playing like that, because it was a great performance. If it's not for him, we probably, at best, I would say we draw that match, and we probably actually lose that match. So, there are times when a goalkeeper, can keep you in a match, but there's sometimes when a goalkeeper has a special day and can win you a match, and I think that was that day for Larnigan.
I completely agree. We don't win that match, or possibly even get a point out of that match without Andy Larnigan. He was phenomenal. And, it goes back to the beginning of this show, Matt. When Marcus Bettinelli is well enough to come back and play, how do you take out Andy Larnigan?
Yeah, I don't think you do. I think, now, given that's a ways away, and who knows? I mean, he could be, Larnigan could could get into a slump and where we need to make a change. But as of today, it's a day by day business. And as of today, I think he's absolutely our number one. And there's no way that you can take him out of the goal when Betts comes back.
Yeah, listen, it's going to be a long time for Marcus Bednar. Let's just stress this, and I wish him a speedy recovery. But as of right now, in the near future, it's definitely going to be Andy Lonergan, unless, like you said, he goes through a slump of some kind. But right now, he's looking real sharp. All right, Matt, let's move on. Let's now talk about the play of the fullbacks, James Husband and Jazz Richards, in this match.
Well, I actually thought that Husbands is a handful getting forward. I think that for other teams, he is, he's a very dangerous player going forward and really pins their outside mids and their fullbacks back as well. But so in the first half, he's getting forward, he's being dangerous. We're collapsing the space and really making it our attacking half kind of a bit hard place for them to get out of. But in the second half, it seemed to, he seemed to be either instructed or he just did it naturally, just kind of drop off and not be as dangerous. He did have that bump on the head, and I think he was bleeding a little bit from what I remember. But that's really no excuse. But I thought he played well. I mean, he was pretty accurate with his passes. He was more involved in the game than Ashley Richards, I thought, especially going forward. I think overall both of them played pretty well. They got done what we had to get done. I thought in the second half they struggled, but I think that was a lot responsible to kind of us collapsing back into our defensive half. And we're at our best when we're allowing our attack to be our best defense. And when we're defending higher up the field, and when we drop in, it's going to be hard for a fullback because then you're dealing with, their backs getting forward, and then you're looking at 2v1 situations and things like that, which is just, a lot of times it's just not going to work. So, overall, not poor performances, but just kind of tactically, I thought it was a struggle for them to be successful in the second half.
Listen, I'm glad that you brought that up because, I watched back the match a second time after watching it live the first time, and Sean Davis on the broadcast mentioned that in the second half, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he was talking about he thought that a problem in the second half was the fact that our fullbacks were not pushing forward. So he agrees with you, Matt.
Yeah, it becomes hard. It becomes hard to be successful as a fullback when you just when you're not advancing yourself up the field and making them have to defend as well. When all you're doing is defending, it's going to be more difficult to be successful. So, we've got to get them further up the pitch more consistently. And when we do that, we're very successful. We've seen it. When we do that, we're actually a hard team to play against. But when we let teams come at us, I don't think that we're good enough as a defensive unit right now to just let teams come at us and pound us. And I don't think we're going to be very successful if that's the case.
Listen, I totally agree with that. I totally agree with your assessment and also of Sean Davis. That's why I'm a little befuddled by that in the second half. But again, we'll see if we can go back to that in a little bit when we have some questions from the Fulham supporters. But let's move on. Let's now talk about the play of the center backs, which are Richard Stearman and Tim Ream. Again, playing for the first time, probably meeting themselves for the first time only a few days prior. Talk about the play of the two center backs.
Well, it's a partnership that we're going to see grow. It's one that I don't really want to do a huge knee-jerk reaction on how that partnership is going to work out. Because like you said, I mean, there's a possibility they could have been shaking hands for the first time a couple of days before the match. I think you've got to wait a little bit to judge that partnership as a whole. I thought that when we could press high and we allowed them to kind of control the tempo and control the possession and things like that, I didn't think we really had very many problems. But I think that really when the cracks showed and kind of the newness of the unfamiliarity with each other kind of showed is when we allowed them to run at us. There were still times where we weren't closing down the spaces. Center backs were not closing down the spaces between them and the center midfielders when we got up, which allowed big pockets of space in front of us. And so we've really got to figure that out. I think there was kind of a disconnect there as well with the center midfielders, and maybe that's a communication thing with both of them being new together. It's kind of who's going to step into that role and really be the communicator and really kind of take hold of the team and things like that. You know, because there was those big pockets of space in behind our center midfielders and in front of our center backs, and it, you know, at any decent level, and we're at a very good level, but at any decent level, if you leave that space and you allow teams to turn and run at you as a center back, you're just not going to be successful more often than not. I mean, they're going to be able to break you down, and you know, we've got to be able to close those spaces in front of us in order to be able to not allow them to have time and space on the ball and things like that. So. For a first outing together, not great, but I think that actually they have the ability to and the characteristics to really complement each other, and I think that they could be actually a pretty good partnership. So it'll be interesting moving forward to see kind of how that grows.
It's a very great point because again, I was going to ask you that. Can you see the differences between the two of them as the ability to complement each other? Like you said, I think that Stearman's a different type of center back than Ream. Ream is better with the ball at his foot, and it seems like Stearman is more aggressive and can jump for the ball more. Am I assessing that correctly, Matt?
Absolutely. Stearman is a center back, if you will. He is tough and rough and very a very physical player and not afraid to run through a challenge, not afraid to get up and win a ball in the air. Whereas Ream is kind of the one that you could see, maybe dropping in behind, keeping possession of the ball, using kind of his head more than his physical abilities to be able to be successful. They really could complement each other very, very well. Because, you know, it's kind of one of those things, if you put both of their best attributes together, you probably have the perfect center back. And you probably have, an international center back. But hopefully they can use those two as a partnership and use their best attributes and turn into a pretty good pairing back there.
Okay, very good. Because it's something I've been curious about. You know, again, I want to give these guys a chance. It's one match, it's one match. And I saw some good things, but you've already mentioned some of the things that weren't so great, but over time, hopefully this partnership will really be able to help out each other and complement each other, because they can do that, then we might really have something with these two center backs together. All right, let's move on to the midfield. I'm curious your thoughts about how they play in this match.
Well, the wingers, to start off with, the outside midfielders, I think Ben Pringle had a bad day at the office. I really don't think he played very well. He only attempted 23 passes in the whole game. And that just shows that we weren't using the width as well as we should, but it also is his responsibility to be able to find space to get the ball. And he only attempted 4 crosses. And, that's kind of a frustrating thing too, because that's kind of what we brought him in to do. And that's something that he's done very well. But he only attempted 4 in 65 minutes. And so that just shows that we really weren't, and the game dictated some different stuff, in terms of how we were going to play. But he really didn't get into the game very much. Kearney, I thought Kearney played okay. I thought that he was always going to be up for the game. At least you hope you're going to be up for the game playing against your former team. He had an 88% pass completion rate, which is fantastic. For a wing midfielder, and that just shows how kind of dialed in he was. Had 3 shots, and was much more dangerous than Pringle. And so we just need Pringle to kind of step his game, we need him to be more involved so that we can be a two-sided team as compared to more of a one-sided team just going down one side of the park. In the middle, it was interesting. I went back and looked at the stats and looked at some of the individual stats. And I thought Tunnicliffe was okay. Turns out that he was just kind of average, maybe even below average. He really wasn't too involved. To have to play 97 minutes and to only attempt 48 passes as a center midfielder, that shows that you're not involved. He's got to be more involved, because I thought that he showed signs of being quite good, but we need him to be involved, because I think he is a good player. You know, in comparison, Jamie O'Hara completed, you know, had almost 70 passes and completed at almost a 90%. You know, he only lost the ball, I think, maybe 11 times in the whole match, and that's phenomenal. That's, you know, that's as good as you can get. So, you know, but again, in the second half, we were just pinned back, and we couldn't really flow. And you know, the game dictated that we play a little bit more direct, as you saw from Musa and Ross being more effective down the middle of the field. So your wingers aren't going to be as involved. But I thought that that O'Hara did an okay job. I thought he was one of our better players, and you know, but there were times that it was kind of a lapse, and that was a little disappointing. That, you know, even in the first half, it was kind of an up and down. Like, hey, we're playing well. Now we're defending a lot, things like that. So just need to see a little bit more consistent out of that pairing in the middle for me.
Okay, very good. And listen, I want to go back and talk about Tom Kearney and the substitution of taking off Pringle, because you said you thought that this was not a good game for Pringle, and it sounds like Kidd agreed with you, because he took him off. He brought on Ryan Fredericks and moved Kearney to the left. I want to ask you, how did that work out? How do you think Fredericks worked out on the right, and then you moved Kearney over to the left?
Well, Fredericks came in and added an element of pace, and he can fly. And that was really, you know, very exciting to see, and very tough to see for Blackburn. Because, I mean, when you see a guy who comes on with that kind of pace, you know, 65 minutes in, and he's fresh, and you've been playing the whole time, you know, that's a tough thing to deal with. And just, you know, the defensive pressure that hopefully he was going to be able to put was, you know, I felt like he was probably the only one that was really pressing high and running balls down and things like that. Kearney's so much more comfortable on the right. I think that kind of showed that he is much more comfortable, you know, on the right side, cutting in, you know, combining with forwards and with center midfielders. But I think that's just what the substitution had to happen with that, because I think Fredericks is a very right-footed player, and so Kearney being obviously naturally left-footed, I think that's just a natural move that's what you have to do. So, but Fredericks for me was showed some signs of and some flashes of something that we'll need, you know, coming up, you know, as we move on through the season, as somebody who can just bring an element of sheer pace and pressure, and, you know, so that we can press teams higher up the field and even counterattack teams. If we are sitting in, he's going to give us the option to counterattack as well with his pace. So, you know, it was a predictable move for me, because I just thought Pringle wasn't involved. You know, so I thought Fredericks did okay in the short time that he was on. Kearney is clearly much more comfortable on the right side, though, so we need to find a way to keep him over there. But it'll be interesting to see if Fredericks sees more time moving forward.
Definitely, Matt, and it's funny because I just want to follow up with you a little bit on Fredericks. You know, the one thing that I do like about him is that you have the flexibility with him to play him at fullback if you want to play him in place of, say, Jazz Richards, or you could play him in the midfield. So again, I like that flexibility, and you know, listen, it might be an unfair comparison. They're different players, but they're also young players. You know, again, I see this flexibility similar to someone like DeAndre Yedlin.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Actually, Heather and I were watching the match, and that's actually who she compared him to. You know, it is great to be a versatile player and to be able to play, you know, either fullback or outside midfield. And be able to run things down and things like that. I tell you what, if he plays outside back, we know we're not getting run past. You know, we know we're not going to get beat for pace down that side. So, you know, that's something that definitely could be exciting. If, you know, obviously you don't want this to happen, but, you know, if Jazz Richards gets injured or even just needs a rest, then that could be a definite option down there.
Okay, very good. You know, again, that was one of the things that I just noticed. You know, I love players that have that flexibility, that can play multiple positions, and obviously he can. I think that's a good thing. All right, let's move on to the play of the strikers in this match. Let's talk about Musa Dembele and Ross McCormack.
Well, I think here's what's so interesting about the first 15 minutes of the match is you can see so much more clearly what the team has been working on throughout the course of the week getting ready for that game. In terms of how they want to beat that team. You can see that so much more clearly in the first 15 minutes than you can the rest of the match, because really what happens in the rest of the match is kind of a chess match because, hey, okay, now they're doing this and we didn't expect that. Now we've got to adapt to that, yada, yada, yada. So the first 15 minutes is key because you can really see what the team, what Fulham thinks is going to be the best way to break down Blackburn. And I say that, I say all that to lead up into their center backs are very slow, or at least not as fast as not as athletic as we are. So we were going to be very direct, go down the middle of the field, try to get the ball into Moussa Dembele on the run through the channels and things like that. And he was very, very dangerous. Early on, I remember thinking to myself, "Wow, it's gonna be a long day for those center backs if they can't catch him in the, if you can't catch somebody in the first 10 minutes, I don't see you catching them in the 80th minute or however long he plays." So, so that was very, very exciting to see, and it was great to see him and Ross McCormack really playing together and being dangerous and really being aggressive with runs and creative and and they were very, very dangerous in the first half. I mean, it was really, really good to see. In the second half, you didn't really see a whole lot of them. We almost dropped back to kind of a stacked two up front. And that's frustrating because that's where we don't want Ross McCormack. And that's something that we talked about before and that, yep. That's not his natural position. That's not where he's going to be at his best. So, we've got to be able to get them higher up the field more consistently because we saw in the first 15 to 30 minutes what that can do to teams and how they can unbalance teams and put them on the back foot and make it very difficult to play against.
Now, very good take there, Matt. And listen, I want to go back and talk a little bit more about Moussa Dembele because he really impressed me in this game. And you were talking about, center backs being able to deal with him late in the match. Well, he had a great opportunity late in the match, if you remember that move that he had. And listen, you got to give credit to the goalkeeper for making the save. But the fact that he was able to take advantage of them late in the match, I see that as encouraging.
Oh yeah, yeah. It shows that he's fit and ready to go, and he's at the races. I think that he's really coming into his own, really kind of getting to a comfortable place where he knows that he's going to get the minutes, and he knows that even though it is under unfortunate circumstances with Matt Smith's injury, but you got to take your chances when you get them, and I think he's getting into a comfortable place, and I think we're going to see him grow as he gets minutes because I really think he's gotten better from game to game to game.
I completely agree. I'm just so glad that he was able to score, but I can really see the goals really start coming. But Matt, going back to the partnership between him and McCormack before we move on, I could really see that really starting to materialize. You could see how well that they were working together. I can even see, again, Colley Woodrow coming off the bench and being a super sub, how the three of those players can really work well together.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And when you can tell when a partnership really starts to gel, when you don't really see them say a whole lot to each other, they just kind of know. They just kind of know what the other one likes to do, what the other one wants to do, and things like that. And so that's when you can really tell that a partnership is kind of taking off, where there's a lot of nonverbals, a lot of nonverbal communication, and maybe even just like a little look or a body shape. And the other player knows that, hey, when they shape their body like this, they're going to look to be, they're going to look to play me in behind or whatever. And so that's when you can really see partnerships gelling. And with Colley, you hope that he can just get in on the action. You hope that he can get in on that and make that kind of a trio. And so hopefully it'll be as seamless as possible if and when he does come in off the bench.
Okay, great. Great stuff there. Matt, all right, let's move on. Let's now just talk about a couple coaching situations that I came up with, and then we have some great questions from the phone supporters that really are going to go great with our conversation we've already been talking about. But let's start here. Fulham were up 2-0 at the half. Now, as we all know, the match can change one way or another with that next goal. You're the manager. What would you have said at halftime to the team if you were in charge?
Well, it's something I always tell my teams, is that 2-0 at halftime is the most dangerous lead in soccer. And I mentioned this at the beginning, that the team that's up 2-0 can fall into a complacency kind of attitude and say, hey, we're up 2-0, no problem, we can just kind of see the game out. And what's going on in the other locker room is they're saying, listen, if we score the next goal, we're in this thing. If we score the next goal, it's 2-1, and we've got a chance. Whereas the other team can say, oh, hey, we can allow a goal and we're still up 2-1. We don't really have to worry about it too much. So it's the most dangerous scoreline, I think, in football. So, what I say after that is the next 20 minutes is the most important 20 minutes of the match. That's what's going to decide how this match goes. If you can score the next goal, then you can see the match out. But if you give up a goal in the next 20 to 25 minutes, you're going to be in for a dogfight for the rest of the match. And so I always encourage my teams to try to put teams away. It's a lot easier said than done. You can be telling your team that till you're blue in the face. It depends on how kind of they're looking at it. But, you know, it didn't look like that was even said. It looked like it was, hey, let's be careful. They're coming at us a little bit. Let's be a little bit more safe. Let's be, not be as adventurous going forward because we're going to leave these spaces in behind, which it just seems like when you tell our players that, they take it to the nth degree and think that, okay, we've got to sit way back and be super conservative and, just let them, kind of soak up pressure and things like that. So, that's what I would have said. And that's just, from a personal perspective. But because I think we were on the front foot. I think going into halftime, we scored 15 minutes to go in the first half. And so, we still have the momentum, even though Lonergan made a pretty good save towards the end of the first half. But, we're still on the front foot. And we're at home. I mean, let's take advantage of this and try to put a team away.
Listen, I couldn't agree with you stronger, and that's what had really frustrated me, Matt, watching the match and watching it a second time. Again, I'm not there at halftime. I don't know what was said. It just seems like they came out much more conservative in the second half. It just seemed that way. And like Sean Davis mentioned, you already mentioned, the fullbacks weren't getting forward. Why weren't they getting forward? Why weren't we taking it to them? Why were we allowing them to take it to us? And that's what really frustrated me in this match. That's why I wanted to ask what you would have done, because I would have done the exact same thing. I'm not a coach, but I would have said to my players, hey, let's get that third goal. Let's do whatever we can. Let's take it to them. We got up 2-0. Let's make it 3 or 4-0, and then we can relax the rest of the match instead of playing it conservative, which I think, whether it was told to them or subconsciously, they fell back and they were being too cautious. And I wish they were more aggressive in the second half. Again, listen, Blackburn were very aggressive. I have to give them credit. But you can throw that aggression right back at them. And that's what I'd hoped to have seen. But that's not what we saw in the second half. It just didn't seem that way. It seemed like we were playing not to lose instead of to win. And that's what it seemed like to me, Matt. Did it seem like that to you?
Absolutely. I mean, if you watch the match back and, you'll see how deep our center backs are playing, how deep our fullbacks are playing, and leaving that space in front. And that's really that's almost like a prevent defense in American football. That's a dangerous, dangerous game to play, because we really, our spacing wasn't very good. Our shape wasn't very good. We were pretty narrow up front, stretched out in the back or stretched out in the midfield, but a little bit too high. And our backs were sitting a little bit too far back in comparison. So all that stuff equals kind of some danger. And Blackburn were very aggressive and they took it to us in the second half. Fair play to them. But, especially if I'm Moussa Dembele and Ross McCormack, I'm going, guys, we're giving their center backs a whole lot of trouble. If we can just stay aggressive, win the ball higher up the field, get the ball to us, we're going to create some more chances. And so it was just, it was frustrating. I'm sure it was frustrating for the front too as well.
Yeah, I agree. Cause again, we were talking about in the last show how it seemed that in the second half, especially Ross McCormack became anonymous and he must have been frustrated. But again, we just didn't see much of him. But I think that was also how the match played out. It was unfortunate how the second half played out. But let's move on. And here's another topic for us to discuss. One of our co-hosts, Mike Gregg, messaged me after the match that he thought Kitt should have made a second substitution along with bringing on Ryan Fredericks to, possibly compliment him. Why not just make one? Why not make two? He did bring on Dan Byrne, but this was very late. In the middle of the second half at that point, he only made that one substitution. Again, Byrne came on very late. So, again, you made that substitution with Fredericks right smack dab in the middle. So I'm going to ask you, do you think he should have added another change? And if so, where should he have made a change?
Well, I think this is kind of a consistent gripe that we have with Kit right now, is or at least during his time here, is the lack of substitutions. And at first I defended him. I said that, hey, he's trying to show faith in his players, and he's trying to show them and build some trust that, hey, he thinks that they can go get the job done. But I think at some point as a manager, you've got to kind of draw a line in the sand and say, okay, I've got to make a change because I have to be able to change the game. The game is not changing on the field, so I've got to be able to plug somebody in and make a change. I personally probably would have brought in another center midfielder to clog up the space in the middle. That's probably what I would have done, is I would have gone, listen, if you're going to go defensive, then let's go defensive. Let's go 4-5-1, if that's what you're going to do. But don't play Ross in a place where he doesn't play. So, bring in another center midfielder and play 4-5-1 and clog up the middle. Because that's where a lot of the problems were arising, was right there in that pocket in front of the center backs. So if you can bring somebody in and plug up that hole, then I think you're going to see us maybe even keep possession a little bit more and be able to get forward, actually, even in a 4-5-1, or a 4-1-4-1, if you will.
Okay, very good.
So that's kind of where I would have gone if I were to make another sub. But it is frustrating. It is frustrating to see us because, substitutions are like timeouts. You don't get to carry them. You don't get to take them with you. And so I think that you've got to, when things aren't going well, you've got to use everything that you have here to your disposal to make things work.
Okay, very good. It's funny because one of the questions does involve that I'll be asking you shortly. And listen, I want to thank the Fulham supporters that did share questions for us to discuss, Matt. We have some really good ones, and I'm going to do it right now. And again, you can go to the Cause Talk Facebook page in the future. Before each show, I'll be sharing a post to ask Matt questions, for topics for us to discuss. Please do, because, again, the ones that we have this week are fantastic, and we can really just go right back into where we are right now. We are still in the middle of talking about this match, Matt, and I'm going to give you a question. I'm going to start off with Matthew Vidiello. Here's his question. A lot has been made about the drop in performance in the second half versus Blackburn. Do you think Kit acted correctly? If not, what changes do you believe Kit should have made to help maintain the lead? I think we talked about it a little bit, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's what we've talked about. I think he changed tactics when I'm not sure I think he needed to. I think that I probably would have walked into the locker room and said, hey, how about more of the same? Why do we need to change anything significantly? Maybe a point here, a point there. Maybe, hey, Pringle, we need to get Ben Pringle more involved in the match. We need to be a little bit more fluid side to side and switching the point of attack and things like that. But overall, I'm sitting there thinking, what really needs to change significantly? And I would think the answer would be nothing from halftime. But, clearly there was a shift in thinking and attitude, from the first half to the second. And, and the changes we would make, again, I that spot in the middle of the field in between our center backs and our defensive center mids was really, really, it was really a problem. And Blackburn, to their credit, exploited it. And I think that we've got to be able to deal with that. And the way you can deal with that is by putting a player there. It's as simple as that. You put a player there and you play the other two in front of them as attacking players. And then you're going to see, you're going to see them have to play wide as compared to straight down our throat. Those are the two, probably the biggest things that I would say is why the big change at halftime, tactically, and why do we not address the glaring problems that happened during the course of the second half? Those are the things that can be pretty frustrating.
Okay, very good. And just to go along with it, because we're already talking about it and you were already alluding to it, Chris Baugh asked this question, so this already came up. Should Kit have dropped to a five-man midfield once it became obvious that Blackburn had complete control of the second half? And it sounds like you believe that maybe he should have.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the center midfield in particular, but the midfield as a whole, wins and loses you games. I think if you control that area, you're going to have a much better chance of winning a game. And if you don't, you're going to have a very good chance of losing that game. And, you know, just with the talent that we have to be able to play a five-man midfield when need be, I think is it's silly to ignore that, and it's silly to kind of shy away from that when we need it. And I think we need it at that point, and that would have been, you know, that would have been a great change to make.
Okay, very good. All right. Next question comes from Tom and Araman. In the current system, would it benefit either Dembele or Woodrow more for one of them to start games while Smith is injured?
I think Dembele is right now has got to be the choice. I mean, I think that he's shown over the past couple games that that he's kind of growing into the role. And he's a very young player, so is Colley, but you know, he's really growing into the role, and you know, he is like we said earlier, he is an absolute handful. I mean, he was you know, running past their center backs like you know pretty easily. You know, when Matt Smith comes back, yeah, it's going to be a difficult situation, and kind of how do we shift back to the style of play? Because it is a very specific style of play that you have to play with Matt Smith in there. But and so that'll be kind of a good question. But you know, I think it may actually make us pretty versatile, actually, more than anything else. I think that's a positive way of looking at it, is we can play both ways. In terms of having a target or having a speed, you know, somebody with pace up there that can run past people and get into the channel. So it'd be interesting to see kind of how we deal with that. But right now, I think you have to go with Dembele, because especially not only because of how he's growing into the role, but also how Colley Woodrow has taken his role in coming off the bench and being so effective.
Right. No, very good point. And, you know, what's interesting about the situation at striker, Matt, because I know that there are some that are upset that, you know, again, upset's a strong word, disappointed that Fulham were not able to pull off that end of the transfer window move for Gary Hooper. You know, it didn't end up coming off because of the situation with the club. You know, they couldn't get the player they wanted. We're talking about Norwich. So again, it was kind of a, you know, kind of a domino effect, and Fulham didn't end up getting the player they wanted. But I got to be honest with you, I'm happy with the striker situation that it is currently, and I like the fact that you got Moussa starting. I think Moussa is going to start scoring many, many more goals, and that partnership is only going to get tighter. And I do like the role that Colley Woodrow has. You know, at this point, would you bring in another striker? Do you think we need another striker?
I don't think you do unless you find one that fits the role perfectly. I don't think that you're out there actively looking for one. I think if one falls to you that, you know, for instance, Dwight Gale or somebody of that nature,
right?
You know, somebody on loan or something like that falls to you and you have the opportunity to get them, then yeah, you don't pass stuff like that up. But I think that you're not actively looking for one. I think that you've kind of got three strikers right now that really fit the mold of the roles that you want them to play. You know, Ross is more of the playmaker, can also assist and score goals. You know, Moose is the pace guy, you know, that can really wow you and score some great goals. Colley right now is a great guy coming in off the bench. And I think that's something that people don't really grasp is, you know what, there are actually people that actually are better coming on off the bench than they are starting. And I think there's a possibility that Colley could be that kind of player, that's a very valuable person to have. And then, you know, whenever Matt Smith gets back, we'll have four and we'll have four very different strikers. And I think that's kind of what you want. You don't want a cookie cutter striker and have four of the same person. I think that really gives a team, you know, a hard thing to deal with when you have to deal with four pretty different players as compared to just four of, you know, they all kind of do the same thing, so it's all pretty easy to defend. So, you know, basically that's a long answer to saying I don't think you go out and actively look for one, but if one falls to you that you really shouldn't pass up, then you take a gamble. But other than that, I think we're good.
Okay, very good. And again, just going on with this theme, talking about the different types of strikers, different types of players, Matt, the flexibility and going back to changing the formation. What I find interesting right now is that Fulham have the ability, if they want to, to play different ways, to match up against their opponent. If the opponent makes a move, you can make a counter move if you want to. That's what I like about how this team is made up. I'm talking about the talent that they have right now. I guess one of the things that's frustrating me, and I don't know if it's frustrating you, is, again, when I look at this last match and I think about how things were stagnant in the second half and how the other team was, you know, like Blackburn were taking it to Fulham, you know, would it, you know, as a coach, aren't you thinking about changing the formation or not just changing the, you know, kind of substitution, but changing how you're playing? And I guess that's part of my frustration here. I feel like Kit should have changed how they played in the second half.
Yeah, well, I honestly think part of the problem is that he changed the way they were playing at halftime. And I think that could be kind of the genesis of the whole situation. And
okay.
You know, that's maybe the frustrating part, is that he actually changed the way we were playing from the first half. You know, I think that if you stay in that aggressive mode, yeah, you know what? You do take a chance of opening space up behind you. But, I mean, how well was it working out for Blackburn in the first half? I mean, yeah, they had a couple opportunities, but, I mean, you can count, you know, on one hand how many opportunities they had in the first half, and you'd have to take your socks and shoes off and use your toes to count for how many good opportunities they had in the second half.
Right.
Because we're sitting down, because we're sitting back. So, you know, I think that's more of the problem, is that we changed to a negative style of playing at the beginning of the second half. You know, so when that happens, I guess you can't really expect a manager to want to change, you know, and show that he was wrong, I guess, you know,
okay.
in that. So that's kind of what I saw.
Okay. Okay. So at that point, you're kind of staying the course because you're kind of committed to what you've already done.
Well, I mean, you don't want to see that. I mean, as a fan, you don't want to see that. But what you hope is that we have a manager who is confident enough in himself to be able to say, "Listen, we came out. That was not the good. That was not the right decision. I've got to change the course again." You know, so I really, what I'm saying is, I completely agree with you that we do have to change it after it's going. But you know, he's got to have the courage to say, "Listen, clearly that's not working. What we tried to do at the beginning of the second half, that didn't work. That's on me. But I'm going to put it back on me to change it again to be a little bit more positive and to fix the situation."
Right, and that's my point, Matt. Again, listen, my team, American Football, are the New England Patriots. It's all about matchups. It's all about reacting to what you're seeing and changing on the fly. If you have to change things, if things aren't working, you change them. You know, you forget about the ego. You change things. You put your players in the best position to succeed. That's been the model for the team I follow here. And I guess I'm just a little frustrated because I think part of what happened in the second half is that there wasn't, I guess you could say, another change that would have possibly changed how things were going in the game. You know, like you mentioned, you think that there was a change at halftime, and maybe if it wasn't working, you know, listen, it's okay to say, you know what, it's not working. Let's change it again. But unfortunately, that's not what happened. All right, let's move on. One final question. It's from Roger Lewis, our friend in Spain. Here's his question. We still seem to allow teams to put in crosses at an alarming rate. I would have brought Burn on much earlier for Ream, as we don't seem able to stop these crosses. What are your thoughts about this, Matt?
Well, I think the first step to stopping crosses is to close down space on the wings and not allow crosses to come in, and at least not allow them to come in easily. I think that we were allowing them some time and some space on the wings, and to allow them to get crosses in. But you know, in terms of dealing with crosses, you know, I can't say I disagree with them. I think Byrne and Stearman are probably going to be the partnership if you're looking to deal with balls in the air. But I think really the problem is deeper than that. I think it's not allowing the cross to begin with, as compared to dealing with the cross once it gets into the box. I think that we played a little bit too narrow in the back and it all goes back to the space in the center. So when the space in the center is exploited, the center backs have to step up. When center backs step up, those outside backs have to pinch in. if they don't pinch in, then we're going to be giving up space within the frame of the goal, and that's when you're going to have a lot of problems. And so that opened up space wide, which allowed them to cross the ball in. So it's all kind of a domino effect from that, from all that stuff. So I think that's kind of the first step, is that we've got to be able to put pressure on the ball to not allow simple crosses, and maybe to be able to either deflect them or make them at least contested crosses, so maybe they're not of the quality that you have if you have time and space to be able to get your head up and play a ball in. And that all kind of stems from kind of what the center backs have to do and how the outside backs have to react to that. So, I agree with them, but I think the problem is a little bit deeper than that.
Very good. Very, very good there. Great way to end the show, to really break down the situation with the crosses, which has been bugging me. So you did an excellent way of breaking that down. I really appreciate that, man. And honestly, I enjoyed doing these shows with you. This is the sixth one. This has been a pleasure. I honestly look forward to doing the next one and many more with you. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you for doing this with me. I say this to you every show, but I just enjoy it.
Well, I enjoy it too, man. It's a lot of fun to look at it it's a challenge for me too. You know, it's a challenge I'm always looking for something new and to kind of keep my brain going and to keep my head, and keep growing and evolving and things like that. And being able to break these games down as if I were the manager definitely allows me to do that. So I really appreciate it.
Okay, fantastic. All right, Matt, let's wrap this up. Before we go, just a reminder, you can download College Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also, you can listen to the College Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith. For Matt, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to College Talk. Cheers, Matt.
Thanks, Russ.
Take care.
Boys and girls, London calling. Now don't look to us, phony Beatlemania.